Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Gopi Janava Nava Giri Varada. Sonanandana Raja Janara Injana Ramunatira Manashari Jaya Radha Madhava Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari All glories to the Simula Bodhis, all glories to the Simula Bodhis, all glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Agyanta Mirandasya Piranjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadhati Swapadantikam Vanchakalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Merevacha Patita nam pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo namo namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. I'm going to do the word-to-word meaning here. Yavat so long avabhasayati illuminates Suragirim the Semuru Hill. Oh, Sumeru Hill, sorry. We're doing verse 30, 5th canto, chapter 1, verse 30. Sorry. Surugarim, the Sumeru Hill. Anu Parikraman, by circumambulating. Bhagavan, the most powerful. Aditya, sun god. Vasudhatalam, the lower planetary system. Ardhena, by half. Eva, certainly. Pratapati, makes dazzling. Ardhena, by half. Avachchadayati, covers with darkness. Tada, at that time. He, certainly. Bhagavat Upasana. By worshiping the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Upachita. By satisfying Him perfectly. Atipurusha. Superhuman. Prabhava. Influence. Tat. That. Anabhinandan. Without appreciating. Samajavina. By equally powerful. Ratena. On a chariot. Jyotimayena. Dazzling. Rajanim. Night. Api. Also. Dinam. Day. Karishyami. I shall make it. Iti. Thus. Saptakrit. Seven times. Vastaranim. Exactly following the orbit of the sun. Anuparyakramat. Circumambulated. Dvitiya. Second. Eva. Like. Patanga. The sun. Translation purport by Srila Prabhupada ki jai. While so excellently ruling the universe, King Priyavrata once became dissatisfied with the circumambulation of the most powerful sun god. Encircling Sumeru Hill on his chariot, the sun god illuminates all the surrounding planetary systems. However, when the sun is on the northern side of the hill, the south receives less light, and when the sun is in the south, the north receives less. King Priyavrata disliked this situation and therefore decided to make daylight in the part of the universe where there was night. He followed the orbit of the sun god on a brilliant chariot and thus fulfilled his desire. He could perform such wonderful activities because of the power he had achieved by worshiping the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport. There is a Bengali saying which describes that someone is so powerful that he can make the night day and the day night. That saying is current because of the prowess of Priyavrata. His activities demonstrate how powerful he became by worshiping the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Krishna is known as Yogeshwar, the master of all mystic powers. In Bhagavad Gita 18:78, it is said, wherever there is the master of all mystic powers, yatra yogeshwara Krishna, victory, fortune, and all other opulences are present. Devotional service is so powerful. When a devotee achieves what he wants to accomplish, it is not by his own mystic power, but by the grace of the master of mystic power, Lord Krishna. By his grace, a devotee can accomplish wonderful things unimaginable, even to the most powerful scientist. From the description in this verse, it appears that the sun moves. According to modern astronomers, the sun is fixed in one place, surrounded by the solar system. But here we find that the sun is not stationary. It is rotating in a prescribed orbit. This fact is corroborated by Brahma Samhita. Yasya gaya brahmati sambritakala chakra. The sun is rotating in its fixed orbit in accordance with the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. According to Jyotirveda, the science of astronomy in the Vedic literature, the sun moves for 6 months on the northern side of the Sumeru Hill and for 6 months on the southern side. We have practical experience on this planet that when there is summer in the north, there is winter in the south and vice versa. Modern materialistic scientists sometimes present themselves as knowing all the ingredients of the sun, yet they are unable to offer a second sun like Maharaj Priyavrata's. Although Maharaj Priyavrata devised a very powerful chariot as brilliant as the sun, he had no desire to compete with the sun god, for a Vaishnava never wants to supersede another Vaishnava. His purpose was to give abundant benefits of material existence. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur remarks that in the months of April and May, the rays of Maharaj Priyavrata's brilliant sun were as pleasing as the rays of the moon, and in October and November, both morning and evening, that sun provided more warmth than the sunshine. In short, Maharaj Priyavrata was extremely powerful, and his actions extended his power in all directions. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. I was just asked to give very last minute, so I don't have much to say. But I can make out from the first message Srila Prabhupada is giving in the first paragraph. It's based on this verse here. It says, Bhagavat upasana, by worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, upachita, and by satisfying Him, the Supreme Lord, perfectly, atipurusha prabhava. So Priyavrata became superhuman. He gained superhuman influence on the strength of his worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the message Srila Prabhupada gives in the first paragraph is that when it is seen that a Vaishnava is able to do something extraordinary, it is not by his own power, but rather by the power of the Supreme Lord that he's able to do something very extraordinary. There are many examples in the Shastras of devotees achieving inconceivable influence by the strength of their devotional service. First example that comes to mind, Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj, on the strength of his devotional service, has such an influence that just by his big toe, he was pushing down the whole earth planet. The whole earth planet was becoming very heavy by the strength of his big toe. That would be nice influence, right? Just like Madhavacharya also, this is coming past my mind now. Madhavacharya, there's some pastime. How's it go? Anyone may be knowing this Leela. With Madhavacharya anyway. Madhavacharya is supposed to be an incarnation of Vayu and Hanuman, I think. Mentioned like this. Anyway, there's some pastime where I forget the details of the pastime. I'm just going to tell the point I'm thinking of. He was asked to, the yogis, he was put his leg in one spot and told some person, if you can move my leg. You know this story? You know? Anyway, there's another one I'm thinking of. Oh, here's another one. Vamanadev, big toe. You know, when Ravana came to conquer the lower planetary system, Sutala, that time Bali Maharaj has become doorkeeper for Bali. And Ravana came to conquer. Ravana had great, powerful influence. But when Ravana came, he saw the doorkeeper. Oh, you're just a short midget. What you will do? And Vamanadeva gave him an experience of his big toe, and he went flying. Anyway, there was another story I was thinking of with Madhavacharya. I can't remember it now. Similarly, Dhruva Maharaj, by his devotional service, just by the weight of his big toe, the whole earth planet was sinking. And then he had, by his holding his breath, he was only taking a couple of breaths every other month or something like that, and he began taking the prana from the whole universe, and all the living entities in the universe were suffocating. They had to go to the Supreme Lord and say, you know, your bhakta is causing a lot of trouble here. Can you do something about it? This is by the strength of his devotional service. That may be an example that's far out and hard to relate to. So then there are other examples that may be a little bit easier for us to relate to, like in Gaur Lila. It was seen several cases. One case is when Mahaprabhu was traveling in South India, his method of preaching was to basically be seen, you know, that people would just see him. And then he would say, chant Hari, Hari, and then they would chant Hari, Hari, and then he would embrace them, the persons that he saw. And upon embracing them, they would be invested with spiritual potency, as described. And then they would go to, those persons would go to their villages, and then their basic preaching strategy was just to be visible, to be seen, and then go Hari, Hari. And then they would embrace someone, and then they would get invested with the same spiritual potency. And then that person would go to his family members and hadi hadi and embrace. And in this way, preaching was spreading throughout all of South India by this method of loving embrace. So by, of course, the power wasn't the power of the individual devotee, but rather he had been invested with such influence by Lord Chaitanya. Another example is Rupa Goswami. He composed so many amazing literatures, so many verses describing the nature of bhakti rasa, which is very hard to understand. Even for us to read it, we cannot conceive of it, what to speak of composing something like that. And Rupa Goswami's, how did he get such power to do like that? When the devotees would hear his compositions, they would be stunned and amazed how he was able to give expression to some of the most esoteric truths of Krishna consciousness. And how is he able to do such a thing? So it is also there described in Chaitanya Charitamrita, being invested with the power given to him by Lord Chaitanya, he was able to do such an amazing thing, as composed the Bhakti Shastras. For any of you who ever tried writing, it's very difficult. Just to write like a Vyasa Puja offering takes us several weeks to get it together, right? You know, just to get my first paragraph in, you know, I'm like straining for a month, you know? And then after a month, I'm like, this is just trash, you know, you gotta start all over. Or to write a weekly, some of you may have to do like weekly reports or monthly reports type of program. And just to organize the thoughts in a cohesive way where I don't seem so foolish, you know. I'm foolish, but I don't seem so foolish. It's very challenging. In other words, to write literature, I mean, that's the example I'm taking from, it requires incredible empowerment, especially to write literature that is meant for the upliftment of the human society, literature that can influence their consciousness. To write garbage and bring people down is easy. You know, we don't even have to write just by being visible. You know, we contaminate others' consciousness. Huh, that's actually a fact. That's a reality. You know, Lord Chaitanya, by being visible, they will become uplifted in Krishna prema. And when we become visible, everyone becomes morose. They said one of the offenses to devotees is to not be happy when you see a Vaishnava. It's like, sorry, Prabhu. I know you don't feel the greatest happiness upon seeing me. Anyway, I'm making a joke. The idea is that to compose literature, first of all, to write a paper itself, like I'm saying, is very challenging. What's this being of composing tons and tons of literatures in Sanskrit, perfectly giving expression to very deep and confidential truths of spiritual life, and in a way that is also digestible for the ignorant masses so they can be uplifted. So obviously to have such empowerment is not the power of Rupa Goswami, but rather the power of Lord Chaitanya. And another example that's too far away from home, Srila Prabhupada himself. Coming to America, you know, everyone knows the history, and yet being able to start a worldwide movement, how was Srila Prabhupada able to do so? It's not his own power, but the power invested in him by the Supreme Lord. That's the idea. When Hiranyakashipu asks Prahlad Maharaj, what is the source of your power? Prahlad Maharaj says, same source as your power, Vishnu. And Hiranyakashipu couldn't tolerate that Vishnu term really used to get him. Vishnu is the source of everyone's strength, Dad, you know? So just like you're getting your power from Vishnu too, I'm getting my power from Vishnu also. And Srila Prabhupada describes there. So the ability to walk, we take it for granted, but the ability to walk, and, you know, to use a bathroom, etc., all these things is coming by the power of the Lord, the ability to digest food. Krishna says he's the fire of digestion in chapter 15 Gita, right? We don't generally appreciate that because how many of us appreciate, thank you, Krishna, you're the fire of digestion. But if you can't eat anything because you're not able to digest, you suffer tremendously. So just to be able to eat requires the mercy of the Supreme Lord. To be able to breathe, to be able to walk, all these things require the power of the Lord is what is allowing it to go on. As Krishna says in the Gita, by a fragment of his power, he's maintaining the whole universe. That's the extraordinary power of Krishna. And we're benefiting from that power to whatever small degree. And then we become more and more powerful by the influence of devotional service to Krishna. as Prahlad Maharaj points out to his father after saying Vishnu was the source of everyone's power, he points out an interesting reality that, well, what is really the indication of power? Because your power generally conjures up an image of like a, you know, maybe a man with huge muscles that can punch a hole through the wall or something, or someone with a gun, or it's generally in the mundane spirit conjures up funny images. What does it mean to be powerful? So Hiranyakashipu, of course, was certainly a very powerful person himself, no doubt. By the movement of his eyebrow, he could subjugate the whole universe. That's pretty powerful. That would be nice, right? That would be ideal. You know, sometimes if you're having trouble in your relationships and you can just manage them just by moving your eyebrow, that would be a very pretty good facility, you know? Why are you not surrendering to me? And then you just move your eyebrow and then they surrender. That would be a good facility, right? Hiranyakashipu wouldn't even have to request the resources of the earth to provide abundantly. They were so afraid of Hiranya Kashipu that the jewels would just rise up from the sea. That would be nice, right? People are diving into the sea, digging holes and so on, looking for valuable jewels. It would be nice if you just walk up to the ocean and then all of a sudden all the jewels are just coming up. That was his influence. He was greatly powerful. But Prahlad Maharaj pointed out an interesting point to him. You may have been able to conquer all the 10 directions, but if you've not been able to conquer your mind and senses, then you have not, then what is your use of your power? You have no power. In other words, he says that the real enemies, except for the uncontrolled mind, there is no enemy in this world. So real power has to be ascertained by the ability to overcome material desires. That is actual power. So someone may be able to go to another country and, you know, and lord it over someone. Just like Srila Prabhupada tells the example of the Alexander the Great story. Prabhupada tells a story of once Alexander the Great goes over to another country and conquers the whole land, and one little thief from the village that comes, he's stealing something, and he's caught by the guards. So they take him to Alexander the Great, and Alexander says, cut off his head. And he said, whoa, 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 what's the difference between you and me? We're like buddies. So Alexander the Great felt a little insulted because, hello, I'm Alexander the Great. What do you mean, what is the difference between you and me? And then the man informs him. He said, okay, I'm a small thief. Therefore, I'm sneaking around. I can take a handful of gold. And then I have to run away. But you are such a thief that in the daytime, you are coming with big army and you're taking everything. And therefore, because you are a bigger thief, they call you Alexander the Great, the great thief. And Alexander the Great could appreciate his realization. So he said, release him. Prabhupada tells his story. So you may have great power in the material estimation, but you can't overcome the influence of material desire. What is your power? And as a result of not being able to overcome the influence of material desire, one is accepting body after body. Sometimes in species of life which exhibit less power, sometimes in species of life that exhibit greater power, but still trapped in the material world. So then what is your power if you can't get out? Sometimes, not sometimes, as sadhakas, we often experience troubles with various anarthas that we're having. Like, for example, fault finding is a very prominent one amongst neophyte devotees. We like to, we get some, how you say, solace in finding fault with other living entities, isn't it? It's like, if I don't find fault, I'm going to go crazy, you know? Or sometimes we do it as a, to sublimate my own feeling of depravity due to my own anarthas. So instead of get defocused from that, just focus in on someone else's fault. And that way I don't have to think so much about myself. I get released like that. And then the only result of fault finding is that you feel more miserable. You don't feel uplifted, right? You spent the whole half hour in the job of finding fault. And then afterwards you feel drained out, you know? I need to take rest. You don't feel uplifted. But then stop that. Stop it. But you can't stop it. Even you know it is not good, and you want to stop, you cannot stop also. This is a situation. So what is our power? We're thinking we're so greatly great personalities because, you know, I made a good point in the class. I extrapolated something from the purport and made a really subtle point, and everyone came up to me and appreciated me. I'm greatly powerful. You know, one's thinking like this, or I let a killer kid, look, man, everyone's dancing my kirtan. I'm powerful. Or I wrote something that's very amazing, I'm powerful, or I cooked an amazing feast, I'm powerful, or you know, I gave a, whatever. We get so easily deluded in the material world. But then can we overcome our anarthas? You know, we're so, okay, you're so powerful, overcome tendency to find fault. Overcome sex desire. You're so powerful. But you can't do it. So Krishna says in the Gita, Uddhava Gita, Swabhava Vijaya Shoryam, he says, real power or real heroism, Vijaya Shoryam, is Shoryam means power. It's translated as heroism. Is to be able to conquer over one's tendency to enjoy matter, Swabhava, his conditioned tendency to enjoy matter. To be able to conquer over that is real power. So then, how do we get such power to do so? To get out of the quagmire of our material existence? Then that is only by the process of devotional service to Krishna. By serving, by an increase, quantitative and qualitative increase in devotional service to Krishna, then one can become so powerful that he can give up material desire also. That would be the real test of power. You may be able to become powerful. You may achieve a position within the society and think you're powerful. That happens all the time. You know, all it takes within an institution is a little bit of steadiness, and then you get promoted. And a little bit more steadiness, and you get promoted. And a little bit more steady, you get promoted. Sometimes people get promoted all the way up to GBC positions and so on. And one may be thinking, that is the indication of my spiritual advancement. But give up the tendency to exploit. Can you stop that? That will be the real test. So whenever we're feeling ourselves puffed up, thinking that I'm doing something so amazing, and we have to ask ourselves this question. How much are we able to control our mind and senses? How much are we able to give up tendency to exploit? How much am I able to abandon material desires? And if I'm not able to do that, that means I'm bereft of power. And the reason I'm bereft of power is because I'm bereft of service to Krishna in a truly substantial way. Or say it in a maybe more positive way, I need to increase my devotional service to Krishna to gain the real power that can capture the heart of the Lord. Now that's power. That if the Lord shall be, just like the devotees are able to bind Krishna with the power of their love, loving service toward him. And that's pretty powerful. There can be no one powerful, more powerful than Krishna. And yet there is someone more powerful than Krishna. Those are the devotees who are the abodes of love for Krishna. They are more powerful than Krishna because they can bind Krishna with their love. That's power. And by that, the material sense gratification becomes totally insignificant. And also, simultaneously, they're able to control Krishna. They conquer Krishna. Krishna says this in the, it is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So that's the first point. The other point Srila Prabhupada points out here is some astrological stuff, which I'm not going to get too much into that because that's beyond my adhikar. But the idea that's being expressed here is that the sun has a fixed orbit. That is mentioned in the Shastras. Modern scientists, they may have changed their opinions now because they're always changing their opinions every couple of years. But at one point, I guess when Prabhupada wrote this, the opinion was that the sun was situated in one place, and then everything was revolving around the sun. But from the information of the Bhagavatam, we get information that the sun was actually moving in an orbit. And the orbit which it was moving in was not very pleasing to Maharaj Priyavrata, because when it would move to one side of the Sumeru Hill, then one side of the earth planet would be dark. And when it moved to the other, then the other side would be dark. And so that was not very pleasing to Priyavrata. It is not that he had issues with Vivasvan. That's the last paragraph, Prabhupada, that why are you doing like this? Rather, he was saying the living entities were bereft of some nice facilities by which they can live their life nicely. And he wanted to provide them that nice facility. He had the power, he had the influence. So he basically created another sun out of his powerful chariot in order to provide facility for the entities of this world. Prabhupada says here that he had no desire to compete with the sun god, for a Vaishnava never wants to supersede another Vaishnava. His purpose was to give abundant benefits in material existence. So that was his purpose. It should not be conceived that he was displeased with Vivasvan and wanting to compete with him in order to show his influence. See how great I am. That will happen with us when we get a little bit of power. We want to, you know, what's the point of being powerful if someone else doesn't acknowledge it, right? You can't get any happiness if you're powerful, but no one else knows. But his purpose was not that. He was not envious. Rather, his purpose was to provide abundant facilities for the living entities out of compassion. So he used his influence to benefit others. That's the idea. Simple point. If one shall become powerful by dint of their devotional service, then that power has to be used to benefit other living entities. Otherwise, that power is used to destroy. That one will lose such power, it will destroy him also. That's a fact. Just like in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's mentioned in the fourth canto, also in the 11th canto, that if one has knowledge is itself a type of power. And if one has certain knowledge, but he does not distribute that knowledge, then that knowledge is compared to water that leaks out of a cracked clay pot. It gradually leaks out. So the idea being expressed is that when there is some power, it should be used for benefiting other living entities. Otherwise, one will lose that power. He will become deprived. Krishna will remove the power. Another example, Arjuna. Arjuna received so much of power by his devotion to Krishna. And then at one point, the power was removed, right? He gives expression to that. He was trying to transfer the queens of Dwarka from Dwarka to Mathura. And along the way, some cowherd boys came with some sticks and just beat him down and took the queens of Dwarka. Now, he was fighting with like 100,000 Nivata Kavachas and, you know, Shiva, and greatly powerful. But then some cowherd boys with a couple of sticks, he had weapons, they had sticks. They came just, you know, beat him and then took. So he was a little bewildered. What's going on here? I'm fighting with Lord Shiva and Indra and all these great personalities, demons, the whole core of an army, you know, single-handedly, practically speaking. And a couple of cowherd boys come. He thought, this is cocky. With my eyes closed, defeat them. They come with a couple of sticks and they take the queens of Dwarka. Anyway, there's an esoteric import to that given by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. But the idea, so then he expresses, without Krishna, then my so-called power is like pouring ghee onto ashes. He gives three other examples. I don't remember. It's a verse in chapter 15. Anyone remembers that verse? It's a nine. Anyway, that's good enough. What is the use of pouring ghee onto ashes? So the idea is that without Krishna's mercy, then I am deprived. That is a fact. So we can get Krishna's mercy by dint of devotional service to him. And in that way, we become empowered. It is not our power, but rather we become empowered to do amazing things, even transcend the material existence. So anyway, those are some ideas I can immediately make out. Yeah, if you want to. The question is, I mentioned that by a qualitative and quantitative increase in devotional service, the point that he extracted was one can control the mind. But we see that we may have a lot of activities externally, but the internal organ, the mind, is still not properly engaged. And therefore, you know, the implicit question is, what's the use of such an increase if the mind is not engaged? We need services for the mind also, not just services for the body, but engagement of the mind. So a quantitative and qualitative increase in the mind's engagements. So what can we do to engage the mind in devotional service? The best thing to do is preach Krishna consciousness. For engaging the mind, that's the safest way to keep the mind engaged in Krishna consciousness, because when you have to explain Krishna consciousness to another living entity, then you're forced to concentrate. And I'm talking about really preaching Krishna consciousness, not just like coming out with a few things to say the bamboozle some bewildered jivas, but when you like really have to preach, like someone's asking a question about Krishna and you have to explain it to them. That means your mind is forced to concentrate on the subject matter that you have to explain. That's just the nature of having to explain anything. You can't like simultaneously think about illicit activities and explain Krishna consciousness. It's not, because the mind doesn't have that power to do that. It's either over here or over there. So if you like, now I can't be thinking about, you ask a question, if I'm like thinking about illicit activities, then I won't be able to speak anything. I have to actually bring my mind to the discussion. So that is the most powerful way of engaging the mind. So it doesn't mean we have to go all out and, all right, there it is, and preach. That could be an application too. But one maybe practical application for those who are still building up their preaching muscles is to do it sometimes, at least through the medium of book distribution. And other times you can do it through like writing. Because in writing, if you have the right sense, it's the same program of speaking. You have to concentrate the mind. And then, of course, the things that you shall be writing about or speaking about should be, would also kind of oblige you to live those things in a more substantial way. So So that way, if you show, like, suppose you talk to a living entity how to give up fault finding, right? This is where you give a class, don't find fault. Then the next day, you know, the first thing that happens, why are you doing like that? Immediately, if you shall recall your preaching, right? Because we generally hear our preaching more effectively than others' preaching. So we shall recall our preaching. Okay, I was just speaking about this the other day. Maybe I should apply it also. Generally, when one speaks, that generally, if they're sincere, that makes him feel the weight of responsibility of also living that thing more. That's like the general way that it works, unless you're just like a crooked person. It generally works like that. Other ways, you know, obviously controlling the mind is a very challenging thing, and it's not such an easy thing. There are many verses. I cannot go through all the verses. I'm thinking of several verses in my head right now. But trivya e nam tadabra viryam upekshaya jeditam apramata guru haresh charana upasana ashtra jahivyalikam swayam atmamusham. There's a nice verse from how to control the mind. So it says, bitrivyam e nam, this mind is a formidable enemy. Tad adabra viryam, and it is very, very powerful. It's formidable enemy because it's very, very powerful. I'm sure we have experience of that. And upekshaya, if you shall neglect the mind, then ajeditam, it will become increased in power and it will destroy you. It is mentioned in this verse. So apramata, if you're not crazy, mata means crazy, pramata means, excuse my French as we say, damn crazy. And apramata means not damn crazy. If you're not damn crazy, then what should you do? Guru Haresh Tarana Upasana Ashtra. Then with the Ashtra, the weapon of worship of Hari and Guru, you should conquer over this mind. Jaihi Vyalikam. You should conquer the mind by the weapon of worship of Hari and Guru. And then Swayam Atmamosham. And that way, although the mind is not really substantial, it still covers the Atmamosham. It covers the real nature of the soul. So the weapon of Hari, worship of Hari and Guru has been recommended. So then when our worship requires the activities of the body, the activities of the mind. So generally, before performing a devotional activity, generally there's an internal preparation before the performance of the devotional activity to help keep the mind somewhat engaged in that spirit. You know, offering of prayers, like for example, chanting the Shishashakam prayers before we do japa. We can do it like a mindless thing, like I'm sure many of us probably do, you know. And then go into japa. Or you can try to, if you have to like meditate on the meaning of the words and try to enter into the spirit. And that way, these are all helpful techniques and controlling the mind. And still, kirtan is the best way to do so. And when I say kirtan, I mean explaining Krishna consciousness to each other. I mean, we have plenty of opportunity in the amount of time we spend in the prasadam hall. You know, sometimes it is observed. So then you can explain Krishna consciousness to one another. This is why, and then Shastra study will become more enlivening if you shall expect to explain that to someone. Like generally, you see what I do. When I study some section, you're going to be hearing about it for next week, you know. That's my Shastra study. I'm learning like 2-3 verses or something, and then everyone I speak to, that's what's going to come up in the conversation. Even if it's random, they may be talking about Prashadam, and I'll say, but Trivya may nam to the Dabra Viryam. You're like, what? Where did that come from? Let's read my Bhagavatam and then, you know, and then explain it. And that way, you're forcing the mind to worship Hari and Guru in this way. It is not an easy thing. Obviously, it is a very tough thing. And it obviously also requires advancement in Krishna consciousness. To the degree we're actually advancing, to the degree the material energy's shackles on us are loosened. So we can't also underestimate the importance of just actually advancing in Krishna consciousness. There's no, like, shortcuts? I'm looking for another word than shortcut, but like formulas. If you do this, 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 here's an acronym. And the acronym means this, this, this. And then just by saying the acronym, you're going to overcome the influence. You have to actually make spiritual advancement. But these are some things that help us. Prayer from before the activity, and preaching is very important to one another, to others, and through writing. Writing is very important. Srila Prabhupada talks about it in several places in his books. So these things I can offer. for consideration. Hare Krishna. You want to say something? You want to say something? You can't. We should try to understand. The question is, we shouldn't. I was mentioning about finding. We think we find solace in fault finding, but the actual experience is we're just disturbed. We can't concentrate. Our mind's totally agitated, and so on. So we shouldn't find fault. That's the message, right? A sidebar message, but the message that he's highlighting. So then, sometimes it is seeing. He's quoting Bhagavad Gita, austerities of the speech, and Srila Prabhupada says in the purport that if someone is a teacher, someone is a student, there's a teacher-student relationship, then the teacher may criticize the student, but he will not do and speak very harshly, but he will not do so to those who are not his students. All right, so then sometimes it is seen that there's a third party who's observing the teacher-student type relationship there, and the teacher is speaking very heavy, and the third party on this side is saying, oh, finding fault. Oh, he's not an advanced devotee. He's not supposed to find fault. Sometimes it happens. So the question is, if we're neophyte, you know, how do we avoid that? And the answer is, you don't. And you try to understand, when we're neophyte, these are the types of mistakes that are going to happen again and again and again. To actually properly cultivate devotional service, Srila Prabhupada says this in NOI 5, one has to raise to the platform of Madhyam Adhikar. Madhyam Adhikar means the stage of mature discrimination. We're able to discriminate maturely. When neophytes try to discriminate, it usually ends up becoming fault-finding or offenses on account of their immaturity. Madhyam Adhikar means a stage of mature discrimination. That is always required for the healthy cultivation of devotional service. On a neophyte platform, generally neophyte platform means strong identification with the material body. And therefore, you know, Atma Vamanya Tejagat, strong tendency to project material or impose material conceptions onto the reality around him. So then, when he's observing the reality around him, he observes it according to the external appearances. So whatever it looks like externally, that's what it is. If he sees Vitrasura, that's a demon. It's not a devotee, but he's speaking like a devotee. He's just pretending. You see that body? He's a demon. Because he's a neophyte. He only will give consideration to the external affair by her mukh. That's what it means to be on that platform. So one has to mature. Of course, if we're on that platform, if we honestly admit, that's another thing that generally isn't done, honestly admitting that we're quite neophyte. We do on account of wanting to receive praise. Oh, Prabhuji, I am neophyte. Oh, I am neophyte too. I am more neophyte though. Like that. That type of thing sometimes goes on amongst immature devotees, but another devotee who's more mature, the immature devotee said, I am neophyte. They'll confirm. And then he'll say, you were puffed up. his real nature will come out. But the idea is that if we honestly admit that, which is the tendency is not to, but if we are able to honestly admit that we're on an immature platform, then Vrindavan Das Thakur's recommendation is we should be humble with all. Right? Sometimes it is seen, I've seen this many times, there's a third party observing the teacher-student relationship and the teacher's chastising the student. And so after the student gets chastised and the teacher goes away, the third party neophyte walks over and kind of says, it's okay, you know, he doesn't know what he's talking about, you know. I've seen this many times happen. They give, like, support, you know. He doesn't know, you know. He wasn't seeing the broader picture as if he was, like, so advanced. So I've seen that happen many times, in fact. Now, it's offensive, you know. It's offensive. So the solution is, if we can honestly admit that, is to be humble with all. We should always understand that I myself am deprived of happiness. I'm deprived right now. I'm in a state of deprivation, right? I don't have Krishna. I'm doing devotional service. I don't have satisfaction in devotional service. My senses are raging like a blazing fire. I'm ready to do sense gratification at any moment. As soon as the opportunity presents itself, I'm out, you know? That's a fact. If it weren't for the being so much sheltered by devotees, then no question, you know? As soon as the opportunity comes, sorry, Krishna, and chasing after the senses. So we have to, you know, we should really think about how much we are deprived. We are deprived right now. You know, we should be crying about it, as Mahaprabhu does. I'm deprived. We should be crying about it, but I'm so unfortunate that I can't even cry at the fact that I'm deprived. You know, I'm quite satisfied with the fact that I have raging senses. And if we can really meditate more, Prabhupada says this is the duty of one who's practicing pure devotional service, to always meditate and repent his sinful activities. He should understand how he's deprived. Then that tendency to find fault is greatly reduced. Because I'm deprived, and I don't really have time to be focusing in on how others are this, that, and the other. I myself am very much deprived. And you should cry about it. That time you will not feel concerned about finding fault with others. Sometimes it happens. We have experiences every now and again when we're really feeling the influence of our anartha sometimes, and it feels so overwhelming, you know, and you feel that I'm not going to make it in devotional service, you know. I remember when I first joined, I thought, wow, 80 years is all that. It's just 80 years. I'm back home, back to God. This is going to be a cakewalk. And now it's 10 years, and I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to make it. You know, after 5 years, it was like, okay, am I going to make it or not? You know, at first it was like full confidence. Definitely back home, back to God. 80 years max, this is going to be easy. So easy. I can't believe people left the movement, you know, just 80 years. The neophytes, we think like this way. And after 5 years, I was like, okay, I can see how some people could leave, you know, and it's a little tough. And after 10 years, I'm like, Krishna, I don't know if I'm going to make it. This is our situation. And when we're able to cry about that, sometimes we have the experience of feeling overwhelmed and actually maybe crying, or just a kind of like a heaviness in the heart on account of our fallen condition. That time seeing faults in others is totally insignificant, because it's so heavy. The experience that you're going through is so intense that finding fault is quite, it's like, whatever, you know. They're way more advanced than me, you know. You feel that, you actually feel that, because you're struggling so much with the mind senses. So when we are able to cry about how we are deprived of Krishna consciousness, we're deprived of taste for the holy name, we're deprived of the actual vision of devotees, when we are able to cry, as Mahaprabhu cries about that, Durdaiva Mijrisami, Hajani, Na Anuraga, that time we make get more strength, power. Krishna seeing the plight, our genuine plight, and our genuine crying out to him on account of our fallen condition, Krishna will empower us to stop that nonsense. But on account of being neophyte, generally we can't cry. Isn't it? On account of just being so externally orientated, we don't feel ourselves deprived. And no, that's one. I mean, I'm not trying to say we got a lot going on for us. And on the one hand, we have good sangha of devotees, etc. I'm not trying to deprecate that or depreciate that. I'm making another point. Like that, but it is necessary to actually improve our adhikar. Otherwise, we can't get out of the cesspool of committing aparads and all these things like that. That is required. Yeah. Yeah, you want to say something? Prabhupada explains in the purport that the mind attached to sense objects as an enemy, and the mind detached from sense objects as a friend. So to make the mind a friend means to make the mind detached from sense objects. And the devotional method of making the mind detached from sense objects is to make the mind attached to Krishna bhakta, like that. That's our particular method of making the mind detached from sense objects and therefore a friend. Like that. That's where Prabhupada explains in the purport if you read it. Oh, I just explained by attachment to Krishna, Krishna Bhakta. What do you mean, what is the intelligence doing? The intelligence is acknowledging, if I don't make the mind a friend, I'm out. I'm out of this Krishna consciousness movement. So the intelligence is, well, here's, okay, well, how do I get the mind to get detached from sense objects? He's heard from a devotee, the devotee has given the advice that he should become attached to Krishna, attached to Krishna Bhakta. Moksha dwaram apavitam. That opens the doors of liberation. Sa eva sabdushu krito. One is attached to a devotee. Prasanga mandram pasham. If he has strong attachment for matter, that is cause of bondage. My enemy. But that same strong attachment, when applied, krito, applied to the devotee, opens the doors of liberation. So he hears this thing from a devotee. So the intelligence will say, perceiving that message, oh, I should become attached to a devotee. So then he might ask the next question, well, how do I do that? And then, you know, our answer would be, in short, by service to devotees, the mind becomes attached. The example is Narada Muni in his previous life. By rendering service to the Bhaktivedanta sages, then he became more attached to them. And he openly expresses that in one of the verses. He openly expresses attachment. So service increases the intimacy between you and another living entity. Just like now we're trying to increase our intimacy with Krishna, it is done through the medium of service. So when we want to increase our politicians, they increase their intimacy with the public by promising various services to them. So through service, the one's intimacy with another living entity is augmented. So we want to get attached to a devotee. It's very hard. We have to render service to that devotee. And through service to devotees in general, one's attachment to them is, and that way, we think in terms of our attachments. That's the way it works. The mind, whatever the mind gets attached to, it will think in terms of that only. So we're attached to sense gratification. Like, so if a young person is attached to sex life, when he comes to the Hare Krishna temple and hears about the four regular principles, I can't tolerate it because he's attached. So we think in terms of our attachment. So if we get attached to a devotee of the Lord, devotees only have our well-being in mind. They're only thinking about our well-being. So we become attached to them, we're actually benefiting ourselves. Because then we'll think in terms of what they want, what they don't want. This is, of course, provided you have that faith that that's what it means to be a devotee. And if you have a faith that that person is a devotee, he is certainly always thinking about our well-being, your well-being. Then that is actually, you're getting the benefit of that. He's thinking of your well-being. So you think of what is pleasing, displeasing to the devotee, then you're getting the benefit of that. That's why it says devotee is one's very self. Except many verses are there. Devata bhanava santa, santa atmatmaham evacha. Krishna says that the devotee is one's worshipable deity, one's bhanava, real family, one's very self. And ultimately, non-different from me, Krishna says this to Uddhava. So then, this is how a devotee is my very self, because I get attached to him, he's thinking about my well-being, I think in terms of his pleasure, I get the benefit, isn't it? Like that. So through service, you know, service to devotee. This is a message we heard many times before, but it can never be underestimated. I mentioned it to you yesterday with Trila. You know, I sent various dilemmas that I'm having in my devotional service to Srila Prabhupada Maharaj and inquiring various things. And so in answer to, he gave very, you know, as Maharaj always, very cogent, you know, very succinct, you know, like boom, boom, boom. But very enlivening and enlightening also. Nature of Maharaj is, like, we have to really, like, go through a whole... And Maharaj would just sum it down to like four words, you know, it's like a sutra, but you understand everything, you know. So Maharaj was mentioning this point. It was a point that I have been talking to the devotees about for the last 3 or 4 weeks. But this is an amazing thing. I've mentioned this before. When other divinities need help, you have a perfect way to give direction because you're detached from that situation. So then there's like clarity. But when the same exact thing happening to you, you cannot help yourself. Because you're attached to that situation. So then you have to, even if you have to hear the same point, you can't tell yourself that point. You have to hear that point from someone else because you're too attached. So that's what happened. I was speaking about this one point to the boys for the last 3 weeks, and Maharaj mailed it to me. Same point mailed to me. I was like, oh yeah, you know, this is a dilemma. Anyway, and the point that he mentioned there, my point is that to get attached, there needs to be service. But when we say service, that automatically is inclusive of two other realities, the served and the servant. So they exist as one, let's say, truth. You cannot have service without the served and the servant. Bhakti, Bhakta, Bhagavan is one truth, three aspects of one reality. So when we say service, it has to be very clear in our mind who is the object of our service. You know, and Krishna is a little far away for the neophyte devotee. So in other words, he tries to think it is for Krishna, but very quickly that leaves his mind. Very quickly it leaves his mind. Even when you try to do that, we're not saying don't do it. Try to do it, but very quickly that idea leaves your mind, especially when you're suffering. Then you're not able to always connect the fact that I'm a servant of Krishna. That's the nature of conditioned life. So therefore, Krishna's agent, the spiritual master, is working as a medium to help us become more Krishna conscious. Guru Bhakti is so much important. Seven cancel. So many verses coming to my head, I'm getting bewildered. Sorry. I'm getting a little bewildered. I'm thinking of some verses now. I have to concentrate here. Anyway, so it should be clear who is the object of our service. And then when rendering a service with that relationship in mind, you get so much empowerment. So much empowerment. So one thing I noticed with my own devotional, being a little personal here, my own devotional application, there are many devotees in the past whom I've been very much attached to. And the relationship apparently isn't as strong as it used to be for various reasons. I'm not going to go into the details. So then there's been periods of lack of clarity of who's the object of my service. And at those times when there's been periods of that lack of clarity, then spiritual weakness, you know, comes. You just don't get any juice in your activities. So when we say we got to become attached, it's through the medium of service. So we have to be clear who is the object of service. You know, and then when that's clear, you can also inquire to that object of service what is pleasing to them. And then when you do those activities, naturally you'll be thinking of them because you've just inquired and all those things. And that way your attachment grows like that. And that way the mind becomes a friend, which was the original question. How to make the mind a friend? It becomes a friend in this way. And those who are bereft of such transcendental relationship, then it's very hard because the mind is a very maha demon. And you'll see, oh, you're not related to anyone. You have no relationship with anyone, nothing to hold on to. And the Maya will see that, and through her agent, the mind, and then she will slowly pull us out of Krishna consciousness. Oh, there's no relationship to anyone. So then she will weave a web around you, the mind, create great confusion in the mind, and pull us out. So we need something from a higher quarter to hold on to. Otherwise, it's very difficult. It's very difficult to make the mind a friend. Even with that, it will be sometimes in enemy mode, but you're more able to subdue it like that. Okay. Anyone wants to say anything over here? Oh, Acharya. Okay. I'm going to give a Srila Prabhupada Maharaj soundbite because the time is running out. This time, understanding your question, I don't see how your first statement fits in exactly with your question, unless you're just giving that as an example of one type of devotee. Yeah, so, and in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, it is mentioned that whichever service that the devotee derives genuine spiritual taste from, that service will be the primary service by which he will achieve perfection. And of course, when we say spiritual taste, we're talking about the devotee that's a little bit matured here also. You know, it can be neophytes. I just don't have taste for hearing, but I have taste for honoring prasadam. You know, there's like, not that you have to be a little bit mature. As we are getting more and more purified, devotees do develop attraction to certain aspects of devotional service. Someone gets attracted to the deity worship. Someone gets attracted to kirtan, either the singing kind or the preaching kind. Someone gets attracted to just hearing. They're the ones who can just hear, like, all day, and they're, like, happy. So then whatever a devotee is finding his nourishment, we sometimes use this language, find your niche in Krishna consciousness, then that will be the primary method by which he will continue to be nourished and ultimately achieve perfection in Krishna consciousness. And then it will be natural also that he will tend to gravitate towards those devotees who are like-minded, which means there's a similar attraction to Krishna, where there's a general like-mindedness in the sense that we're all devotees, we're all attracted to Krishna, but then there's a specified like-mindedness according to the type of attraction to Krishna. So then those who are appreciative of Harinam, kirtan, then they might do that. Those who are appreciative of preaching, you know, there will be a natural, and that's, of course, any spiritual society should accommodate for that variety. Of course, maintaining Shravanam and Kirtanam as a foundation meant for everyone to do, then the variety of activities in Krishna consciousness and being attracted to devotees who are also having a similar taste in devotion that you are having, that is a very natural thing. So that answers my aspect of the question. Yes, that is okay. Yeah, they're both valid. We were just studying a section of the Bhagavatam yesterday where Sri Kavi is explaining to Maharaj Nimi about the path of devotional service. It's so powerful that if one accepts the devotional service of the Lord as it is given by the Lord, that even if one is running with both eyes closed, he will not slip, he will not fall down. There's a verse there. Even if both eyes are closed, he will not fall, he will not slip like that. Well, how is that possible? And the idea is that one eye represents the Shruti and one eye represents the Smriti. So both eyes closed means that there's ignorance of the Shastras. There's ignorance of the Shastras. But the devotional service is so powerful that even if there's ignorance of the Vedic Shastras, when rendered sincerely to Krishna, then one will not fall away from Krishna consciousness, whether he will go into perfection. And the idea that's expressed in that verse is very nicely. I'm not able to go through all the details. But Krishna works as super soul within the heart. Prakashante Mahatmanaha. Seeing the sincere devotional service of the devotee, revealing all the imports of the Vedas within his heart. Those revelations within the heart will never contradict the Shastras. So this point is made. That sometimes someone may say, I'm having a spontaneous realization. But if it is seen to not be in line with the Shruti Smriti Puranandi, Pancharatra Videmvina, Akaintiki Hare Bhaktir Upatayava Kalpate, if it's not in line with the Shastras, then that's just the disturbance of society. Get out, we don't want you here, you know. But if it'll be seen that that revelation will be another way they're getting the Shastric import. And another devotee, he'll be studying, he has the intellectual acuity, Krishna's giving him that gift. So by reading, and also by firm faith in Guru and Krishna, not that reading, no firm faith in Guru and Krishna, but by reading and firm faith in Guru and Krishna, he gets so much of realization. Now that devotee who has intellectual acuity, he might be able to penetrate certain nuances that another devotee won't be able to give full expression to on account of not having that particular type of ability. So then when those two devotees come together, they'll have the same realization, but another devotee may be able to give more expression to it on account of this particular gift of Krishna in the form of a very evolved intelligence, spiritual intelligence. Like Hridayananda Maharaj, Prabhupada said, he had a transcendental intelligence. So when he gives Bhagavad Gita, if you ever heard any of his Bhagavad Gita classes, they're amazing. Like he just sits there He looks at the verse, he'll explain the words and give like this amazing powerhouse class that we wouldn't be able to do even if we like study for, you know, 3 days to prepare for a class. We wouldn't have made even half the points he made. He has a transcendental intelligence. So we'll be having the same realization, let's say, as Maharaj will be having, but he can give expression to it in a much more profound way because of another gift of Krishna's, another empowerment that he has from Krishna. So like that, then the voice will work together. And then Maharaj may not be able to, I don't know, I may not use Maharaj, but he may not be able to be like do a killer kirtan. But that other devotee could probably lead like a killer kirtan. So when it comes time for kirtan, all right, Maharaj, no. I'm being a little playful, you know. Suppose there's both senior devotees, and you're not like a, yeah, I'll do the kirtan now. You gave the class, and then to Bodhinyanta Parasparam, huh? Devotees are enlivening one another. So we generally tend to think that that means that they're both maybe discussing shastras together, because that's what it says, the verse said. But it can mean they're enlivening one another in terms of what service they can offer to Krishna. So that devotee is sitting and giving class, and that devotee who can give the class, he is enlivened. This is, same realization is there, same seed understanding is there, but he's expressing it so nicely. I would never be able to express like that. So he gets enlivened. And that devotee who gives a nice class, he cannot sing kirtan. But that devotee who couldn't give class, he can sing kirtan. So then the devotee gives class, he feels enlivened. Wow, what a nice kirtan. And that way devotees are nourishing one another in Krishna consciousness. Like that. Hare Krishna. All right. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.